thought was bio.
No, right. They don't have blood. The operation.
Actual blood.
That was a good one.
Did you cry?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I teared.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Yes.
It's not on the agenda yet.
Good morning, and welcome to the Portland City Council. Today is Wednesday, 9:30 a.m. session, January 12th, 2011. And before we gavel in the quorum, I'd like to make a very special presentation, if you'd please come forward. Whereas the city of Portland draws its strength from the diversity of cultures, traditions, and experiences of its employees. And Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Columbia Northwest is open and inclusive with their children, families, and volunteers. And whereas the city of Portland is fortunate to be the employer of valued and remarkable employees who recognize the need for positive interactions between our communities, youth, adults, and Big Brothers, Big Sisters is creating one-to-one relationships between caring adults and youth. And whereas the worth of such interaction has been documented as an effective strategy to reduce crime and the fear of crime, reduce the high school dropout rate, reduce the use of alcohol and illegal drugs by youth, and reduce the overrepresentation of youth, and especially minority youth, in the criminal justice system. And whereas Big Brothers Big Sisters represents a local organization that can facilitate increased involvement between the large potential cohort of adult volunteers employed by the City of Portland, and whereas Big Brothers Big Sisters has extended an opportunity to the Portland Police and all city employees for volunteer activities that their workforce may participate in to enhance their lives and the lives of youth in their communities. And whereas during January 2011, Big Brothers Big Sisters will acknowledge these efforts publicly, now therefore I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim January 2011 to be Big Brothers Big Sisters Month in conjunction with National Mentoring Month in Portland, and encourage all residents to observe this month. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, council members. My name is Al Segala. I'm the vice president for Big Brothers Big Sisters Columbia Northwest. I'm still a little hoarse from the Ducks game. They did a great job, but I want to thank you in honor of all the mentors here in the Portland-Vancouver area. Our mission is to provide, as you said, one-to-one relationships for our children most in need. Those mentorships result in great children, children who are less likely to be involved, as you said, in criminal activity, in drugs and alcohol. It also leads them to become better citizens. Big Brothers Big Sisters concentrates on investing in our best resource, our most precious resource, and that is the human resource. I thank you.
Thank you. My name is Shabri Vickers, Director of Community Relations and Diversity, and I just want to also thank the Commission and the Mayor for helping to celebrate the 10th annual National Mentoring Month here in Portland through the proclamation. So thank you.
Thank you both very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard? Adams?
Here. We'll begin with communications. Can you please read item number 38?
Request of Joe Rastatter to address council regarding fair wages at PGE Park.
Okay, thanks. Good morning, Mayor and City Commissioners. Thanks for this opportunity. My name is Joe Rastatter, and I reside in the Hollywood District with my beloved wife, Melinda. We enjoy very much, by the way, having Cesar Chavez Boulevard in our neighborhood. I'm a member of St. Francis of Assisi Parish, a member of Unite Here, Local 8, for my job of selling beer and peanuts at major league events in Seattle. I'm also the co-chair of Jobs with Justice Faith Labor Committee. Two events helped to sustain my spirit this time of year, the Martin Luther King Day celebration at Highland Christian Center this Monday, and our Jobs with Justice annual Faith Labor Breakfast set for March 1st. Please attend. I was touched by the testimony of our war veterans last week to this body, and I agree it's essential to provide substantial memorial. My recently deceased father, Robert, was an Army sergeant who served directly under George Patton, and he's the person most responsible for my values. Raised in an orphanage after his father was killed in an industrial accident, Dad became the type of Catholic most concerned with service to the poor. He believed that I do, that the growing disparity between the super rich and everyone else is a national disgrace, and I would add, is sustained by a war on workers. As a Jobs with Justice person, my dad believed that fighting for justice at the workplace was a great way to support the troops. So what happens at the local level is very important. Portland development deals need to be evaluated for its justice content. Do they lift up the poor, or do they increase the disparity? Past deals with Paul Allen at the Rose Quarter and with Portland Family Entertainment at Civic Stadium busted unions and workers lost ground. Workers deserve to be treated fairly everywhere, but especially at our public-owned properties. Fair wages and just treatment of workers should be written in as part of the deal. Easier said than done. Watching and advocating for hundreds of hours over the last 10 years, here's two of my highlights. One was when PGE Park employees were threatened to be fired by an interim owner if they talked to you, City Council, or if they talked to me about the fair wage ordinance. And number two was when I was told, when I told an usher grandmother that the ordinance was going to kick in again and raise her wage from $8.25 to $10 an hour, she cried. The difference between $9 and $11 an hour for Portland workers is huge. So the fair wage ordinance, and we worked a lot on it, is flawed, but it's still very important to struggling workers. It will take conscientiousness on your part to see it is implemented properly and include all workers it was intended to. If workers at Civic Stadium decide to organize a union, I think you've committed to make it, and I say it is very important to see that their efforts are treated fairly. So please do what you can to promote good jobs with justice in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Can you please read the title for communications item number 39?
Request of Dixie Johnston to address council regarding Portland plan and comp plan and citizen involvement. She is not coming.
Okay. Can you please read the title for communications item number 40?
Request of Marianne Schwab to address council regarding comp plan and Portland plan phase 3. She also is not coming.
Okay. Moving to the consent agenda. Can you please read the title for item number 47? Unless there's objection, I'll refer it back to my office.
47, authorize intergovernmental agreement with TriMet for the Portland Lake Oswego Transit Project.
No objection, so referred. Can you please read the title for item number 51, which I understand, unless there's objections, will be referred back to Commissioner Fish's office.
51?
Yep. That's what I was told.
News to me. It's news to the commissioner, but someone could tell me why.
I don't know. Then we won't refer it back. I think it was at the request of your office. But
oh, it's not news to me. No objection.
Okay. Can you please read the title?
51. Amend contract with Triad Technical Group to add $40,000 for Portland Housing Bureau information and technology transition.
Okay. Unless there are objections. Referred back to Commissioner Fish's office. There's a Scribner's error on the agenda that I would just note at this point, and that's on item 57. It should say Office of Government Relations instead of Office of Government Management. And unless there's objections, the record will note that as a Scribner's error and amendment. Okay, can you please call the roll, or does anyone else wish to pull an item from the consent agenda? All right, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz?
I vote aye. I want to note that on item 45, which is accepting Metro funds of over $750,000 for recycling and waste reduction programs, requires a mid-year and annual report on progress made, and I would like those reports to be presented at Council so that Metro taxpayers learn how their money is being used successfully to reduce waste. And I'm particularly interested in the work that is being done with large businesses.
Fish.
Did you vote?
I did vote.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
She voted first.
She voted first. Okay.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. That takes us to the regular agenda. Can you please read the item previous, it was on a previous agenda, read item number, emergency ordinance 56.
Accept a grant in the amount of $2,445,563 from the Oregon Department of Transportation and authorize an intergovernmental agreement for the design of the Northeast 102nd Avenue, Northeast Gleason to Southeast Washington, Phase 2.
Welcome.
Morning, Mr. Mayor and City Council. My name is Winston Sandino. I'm a project manager for the City of Portland, Bureau of Transportation. The 102nd project is going to construct Phase 2 of the overall plan. Phase 1 was already constructed, and this ordinance is going to give $2.4 million from federal funds to build Phase 2. There was a little error in the ordinance that we fixed. So, but the project, the overall project is going to be, this year we're going to start design and right away, and we're going to construct the project next year. 2012.
Any questions from council?
The previous ordinance number 11 had an emergency clause in it, and I don't see one in this ordinance.
No, it doesn't need it to be an emergency.
Thank you.
How come mine has a star on it?
Because the previous one was an emergency, but this was particular. That's why I was asking the question. And when we did it as item number 11, it had an emergency clause at the end, but this one doesn't.
Okay. All right, any other additional discussion from council? Does anyone wish to testify on item number 56? We will note for the record there's an additional Scribner's error to remove the emergency asterisk next to the numbers 56.
So we have a substitute?
We do?
The whole substitute ordinance. Thank you.
Substitute's been moved. Is there a second?
I second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the substitution? Anyone want to testify on the substitution? Can you please call the vote on the substitution?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Substitution has been accepted. It moves on to a second reading next week as a non-emergency. Can you please read the title for a report, item number 57?
Accept the report on the 2011 federal legislative agenda.
So the federal agenda ensures that the city's advocacy to the federal government is focused on the vital issues to Portland. As such, in this package, which has been developed in cooperation with all the bureaus, with members of the council staff, with councilors themselves, it includes requests for new transportation investments that emphasize safety and freight mobility. Leading on the cutting edge in innovation and sustainability with projects like the Oregon Sustainability Center, keeping our community safe through a multitude of public safety initiatives, preserving much-needed affordable housing in Portland and across the state. And I'm very pleased that it also includes new projects and partnerships in East Portland, including asking for federal assistance for the creation of the East Portland Gateway Education Center. In doing so, I know I join with my council colleagues in thanking our congressional delegation and the hardworking staff for their work and also consulting with us on this group of priorities, and thank them for their ongoing work. With that, I'd like to introduce Martha Pellegrino.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Thank you for the opportunity to bring to you the city's 2011 federal agenda. As the mayor mentioned, there are a broad array of issues represented in this agenda. Structurally, it is divided into appropriations requests and then policy and other project priorities. Identify that this report is a substitute from what we filed. There were two substantive changes I just want to point out to you. One of them is the appropriations request, the first request on page one for the Oregon Sustainability Center. The request that has been substituted is focused on the funding for the development of the center's conferencing and training facilities, which is a bit different from what you saw before you, which was water and wastewater infrastructure that reflected the request we made last cycle. The second change I just want to bring to your attention is one of the appropriations requests. The PDX Design Forum has been omitted from this list because we've been working with our partners at the University of Oregon, who will be the lead on that project. So we will continue to be supportive, but the U of O will be submitting that request to the federal delegation. At this point, I would like to do a couple of thank yous, and then I'm happy to answer any questions from council. I'd like to thank my newest staff member, Niels Tilstrom, who is sitting out here in the audience, federal legislative assistant, for his work in helping to draft and develop parts of this agenda. I would also like to thank Vicki Cram, the city's federal lobbyist, who was unable to be here today, but who also gave us a lot of advice and guidance in the building of the agenda. And lastly, I would like to thank members of your staffs and of Bureau staffs and each of you for your input and help in building this agenda.
Discussions from council?
Here, I have a question, if I could. And first, Martha, thank you to you and your team for the collaborative way you pulled together this agenda. Could you just very succinctly remind us how the world has changed with a change in leadership in the House, and particularly how that could impact requests that we have pending for earmarks?
Sure. Let me take that in a couple of parts, Commissioner. First, the Republicans have taken over majority of the House of Representatives, whereas Democrats are maintaining a slim majority in the Senate. What that means with regard to earmarks is there's still an open question of whether there will be earmarks this coming session. The House has resolved not to pass any bills, including earmarks, although there have been some substantive discussions about what is an earmark. So that may still have yet to be determined. On the Senate side, Senate Democrats have not yet essentially adopted a ban on earmarks. So the possibility and the city's opportunity for potentially submitting projects this cycle will rest with our U.S. senators. And we have been told by staff to go ahead and develop projects, and they will certainly let us know if there's any changes to that.
Any other discussion from council? I move the substitution.
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? Anyone wish to testify on the motion? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Thanks again, Martha, and to your team. Aye.
Saltzman?
Thank you very much. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Does anyone wish to... The substitution has been approved as the basis of further consideration for item number 57. Does anyone wish to testify on item number 57? Carla, can you please call the vote on item number 57?
Fritz.
Thanks to the government relations staff and also to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement for assisting the mayor and me in the public involvement in this agenda. We appreciate the fact that citizens have been involved and knowledgeable about what's going on, and then we can help them with our lobbying training, which is coming up on January 18th, to learn how to continue to partner with us. Also, thanks to Vicki Cram in Washington, D.C. for many years of successful service. And thanks to our congressional legislative delegation. The shooting in Arizona last week shows that their job is not only difficult in terms of policy and wise choices, but dangerous. And we appreciate the service. Aye.
Fish?
This is an ambitious agenda during tough times, and I do want to call out one particular initiative that the Housing Bureau continues to support, and that is legislation which would allow us to tap residual receipts in expiring use properties. At a time when it's unlikely that we're going to get increased federal appropriation for housing, this is a common sense approach developed here in Oregon that it would allow us to tap money that actually accrues within certain developments and use it for the acquisition or rehabilitation of housing that's affordable to older adults. people with disabilities and low-income residents. So we're hopeful that notwithstanding the change in leadership, we can continue to press the case that this is a common sense approach to putting more money into our affordable housing agenda. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Martha, her team, underscore a welcome to NILS, and look forward to working, traveling back to the East Coast to engage in our begging for money responsibilities from the federal government. It's great to work with you all. Aye. Federal legislative agenda is approved. Can you please read the item, emergency ordinance, item number 58.
Award a 5-year contract with Central Parking System for parking garage management services with anticipated gross revenues to the city of over $66 million for the 5-year contract period.
Mr. Giesen, Ms. Moody, welcome. What are we looking at?
Good morning, Mayor. Christine Moody, Procurement Services. Today you have before you an ordinance to authorize a contract with Central Parking System for parking garage management services for the city's 6 Smart Park garages. In September 2010, an RFP was issued and proposals were received from Ace Parking, Star Park, and Central Parking System. The responses were evaluated by a 4-person selection committee, which included 2 downtown business representatives, 1 parking garage management expert, and 1 former PBOT employee. Central Parking System was the highest scoring proposal, receiving 355 points out of a possible 400 points. This contract will be funded by receipts from the 6 parking garages. Net revenue to the city will be based upon actual revenue minus operating expenses and management fees, which can fluctuate based upon the usage of the garages. The gross revenues are anticipated to be $66 million over the 5-year contract term. Operational expenses are budgeted at $9,700,000, and management fees costs are budgeted at $970,000, with net revenue to the city projected at $55 million over the 5-year contract term. The city chose to set the contract term for an initial 3 years with an option to renew for years 4 and 5. The purpose of this arrangement is for the city to be able to evaluate the contractor's performance during the initial 3-year term. If there are concerns, we would have the ability to let the contract automatically terminate and issue a new solicitation at that time. Central Parking System has entered into a joint venture equity partnership with a local organization, the Independent Development Enterprise Alliance, and has a subcontractor arrangement with Benetti Partners and Oregon Certified MBE WBE for purposes of this contract. I'll turn this over to Ron Giesen to talk more about the specifics of this contract.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. It's my first time here, and I'm happy to be in this chair, at least for now. Parking garage management in the city has been unstable for the last several years because of our search for appropriate management, and my comments will be brief and be related to what I believe are your specific concerns, and that is we are seeking a stable solution to parking garage management here that will last 3 years, 5 years, perhaps 10 years, and I think we've laid in place this proposal and other things to make that happen. Outsourcing is a great way for the city and others to get expertise that we couldn't possibly produce on our own. We have run a very rigorous RFP process this time around, and I think staff have done just a really great job in doing this. Heavy citizen involvement, heavy involvement from the business community, diversity community, and I think it really is solid. There are other things going on that I think will make things stable, and that is we are committing within our budget to fund $1 million of improvements in technology for the parking garages. We are seeking a new parking garage manager. That search is underway. As part of this contract, we have heavy reporting requirements, monthly reports, annual reports, and annual audit. We have an external consultant with us who will help us with management reports and oversight. And so I am confident that we are on the right track in terms of this proposal. And some time ago, you had the wisdom, I think, to transfer this function to PPOT where it belongs, and I think that also provides a good base of support. Second of all, I want to emphasize the importance of the revenue flow out of parking garages to PBOT and to the city. This is about a $10 million operation. And revenue goes first and foremost for operating expenses. It goes to provide any maintenance, any improvements in the garages. Funds are used for general transportation revenue support, used to support bond issues in the garages and more broadly. And it is, in fact, just a really key revenue support for PBOT. And Central Parking has shown a record of innovation, of being sensitive to management concerns, low cost, and we are delighted to partner with them. Thirdly, I wanted to address the impact on employment. I think whenever you introduce technology, there is the potential for displacement of employees, and that occurs to some extent in this proposal. We're sensitive to it, Central Parking is sensitive to it, and we are committed to working with Star Park to try to retain employees to the greatest extent we can in higher level jobs than they have currently. We're looking at moving from a set of cashiers who will no longer be needed to ambassadors, to maintenance staff. And one of the things that impressed me about this proposal was Central Parking was the only one coming forward saying we will have a person in the garages 24/7 to respond to citizen concerns. So I think we have a nice combination of technology, but a human touch in the garages as well. This proposal is very strong in terms of working with IDEA and other others in the community. So they are very strong with joint ventures with folks in this community. And so we encourage your endorsement. We are open to revisiting and making reports to council as necessary to keep this on track. I think the idea of having a three-year agreement that allows for some negotiation with expansions to year four and five allows us to really keep on track of this. But we are set, I think, to remove the instability and to put in place a system that will really work for us.
Discussions with council?
That question.
Thank you. And I appreciate the mayor taking the time to allow rebidding on this contract with a revised request for proposals. Since there was some controversy in the previous proposal, could you please tell me who the four evaluators were? You said what their jobs were, but I don't see anywhere listed who they are.
Christine, do you have that?
Yeah, it's listed under citizen participation.
In the citizen participation, that's who reviewed their request for proposals, but it doesn't say who the four people who reviewed the actual contract
right.
are.
So it was Michael Jacobs, who is the former parking garage manager for the city of Vancouver, William Palmer, a downtown businessman, James Rickman, who's an owner of a downtown CPA firm, and James Louis, who's a downtown restaurant owner. And Mr. Louis helped with the written proposals, but he had other obligations, so he did not sit on the oral interviews. And Don Gardner, a consulting engineer, and he's the retired transportation employee.
So that's the same as the RFP evaluation committee?
That's correct.
That's the same evaluation. That is the evaluation committee.
William is the president of the Downtown Retail Council.
I just as a side note, I think we should have some discussion about having a woman on each of our committees that does these kinds of selections, but that's an aside. You mentioned the contract provides for 3 years within a two-year extension. Will that decision be made at council after 3 years?
No, that's a...
My understanding is that procurement has the authority to expand the contract for years four and five.
And what are the standards for deciding whether or not they've done a good job?
The RFP that Central responded to, as well as the contract, has a whole set of benchmarks and criteria within it. And the annual audits will be will be related to whether or not they are satisfying those key criteria.
So I would like to get copies of those annual audits. In particular, I'd like to report annually on how, after the first year, on how well they've done on retaining the existing employees. I'm very glad to hear that there's going to be 24/7 in-person participation in the garages. That relieves some of my concerns. How is the revenue expected to increase? What are the reasons for projected increased revenue?
In this business, the human touch, in terms of cashiering, often creates issues and concerns and loss of revenue. That's just the nature of the business. Through the use of technology here with kiosks and automated systems, that really just tends to decline. I think that the work of Central with the business community, validation programs and so on, will increase revenue, and I think we'll just be operating much more efficiently.
So the projection is for...
If I could sort of add on to that, the greater sales effort to businesses to sign up for validation means more uses of the garage. So an aggressive sales pitch to businesses has the opportunity, and increasing the validation program has the opportunity to bring in more revenue. Mm-hmm.
And the cost in the garage as well will go down through the use of technology.
So we're not projecting to increase the parking fees?
We are not at this time.
Thank you. And how much money, the projection is for $11 million a year in revenue. How much do we currently get in revenue from the parking garages?
About $10 million.
So about a million increase. Thank you. And then my final question, we had a discussion when we were reviewing handicapped permits about the possibility of use of allowing the handicapped spaces in the garages to be used without cost to free up more park spaces on street. Can this be part of the ongoing assignment to this contract? To the contractees?
I can tell you that that conversation is ongoing, and there are relationships between how handicapped parking is treated in the garages and how it's treated on the street that we want to make sure that that's thoroughly considered.
So how do you coordinate in the overall city center parking strategy between those kinds of questions? What's the mechanism for PBOT, who needs to look at revenue on the meters as on the streets as well as in the garages? How is that going to be coordinated?
Well, this predates you being in your position, so your question is what exactly?
The city also needs to maximize revenue from parking meters on the street, which currently in any space other than a 15-minute space, somebody with a handicap permit can park there as long as they like without charge. So we had a discussion when we reviewed the permits about better utilizing the spaces within the garages, which are accessible, have elevators, and are dry and probably more comfortable for people to use than on-street parking. But then that obviously would decrease the revenues in the garages, even while it increases the revenues on the streets. So we as a city and the council need to make sure that we maximize both customer service and revenue, and how is that going to happen in between this contract and PBOT's management of the meters?
So the advice that we've sought from the disabled community is mixed on whether they like street or garages. I would say mixed at best. Right now, our subsidy based on that is about $1 million a year. So the discussion of it in the garages, I guess the answer to your question is probably best had as part of the budget process, because it's foregoing revenue either on the street, a stall on the street, or a stall in our garages.
My question is more how the management of the more coordination of the city's parking strategy, the money for sure, but also that question of who gets to decide how those handicapped spots, and what's the mechanism for interaction between PBOT and the contractee?
Well, I mean, we're allowed to make amendments to this contract, those kinds of amendments to this contract moving forward.
Is there any kind of a committee or a point person?
Our committee work when we looked at the on-street spots did not look at the parking garages. So I'm happy with the status quo right now in passing this. I think further discussions in the budget process is probably a good time to have that and ask the budget committee, which also obviously looks at operations issues for PBOT, to maybe take a look at that.
And if we decided that we did want to have that happen, does this contract allow us to tell the contractee this is what we want to have happen?
Yes.
Thank you.
So,
at our cost, not theirs. Right.
A couple questions. Explain to me the automation will be complete. There will be no cashiers whatsoever.
Each parking garage will have an automated system in and out in which there will be no cashier at the exit or entrance.
And how do you pay by cash? If you're
the kiosks have the capacity to accept cash and deal with change. There is also TV monitors at each entrance and exit so that you have the capacity to reach a human being, at least remotely, through this television system to respond to your concerns. And there are broad-angle cameras at each location so that we can secure information in terms of license plate numbers and IDs and so on. And failing that, there is a human available 24/7 to assist.
The notion here is to be visible not only on the entrance but on the floors as well and the structures so that we have a good deterrent against crime.
So the remote terminal, okay, so I'm going out the garage. What do I encounter first, the kiosk and then the remote terminal, or the remote terminal, kiosk, or are they all one unit?
Well, I may want to have Central Parking weigh in on this so that I don't confuse you, but I believe you deal with the kiosk first, you deal with TV help second, and you deal with human support third.
Are you saying, do you pay as you enter or leave?
as you leave. Right. So if I'm having trouble with the kiosk, I'm able to pull forward and talk to a remote terminal, or am I impeded by a gate that I have to get through first?
The gentleman walking up behind you.
That's a detail that's beyond.
But this beyond is a concern here to me, because I do worry about queues in the garages. As a deterrent to people wanting to park in the garages, and if something isn't working with a remote terminal or the kiosk, and there's no human around, although there's somebody in the building, people get frustrated.
Let's
pretty
get an
quickly.
Yeah.
Understand,
sir? Would you introduce yourself?
Jerry Scalette, Central Parking. To answer your question, how it works, there are kiosks in every facility by the elevator cores, so the main entry and exit pedestrian areas. Also, you have pay in lane equipment, so everyone is encouraged, obviously, to pay at the kiosk. However, if they get into a lane, they can pay in the lane as well.
Okay, I guess that's what I'm referring to, is the pay in lane experience.
Yes.
So you encounter a place where you insert your validated ticket or you insert the cash, and if something isn't right, where is the terminal? Is it the video terminal?
It's right there.
Right there.
So at every single lane, entry, exit, and at every paying kiosk, there's direct communication at all times. So not only do you have a human touch, you've got people in the facility, roving in the facility, but you have access, instant access, really, to someone to help you from every single terminal, every single entrance and exit.
And will those cameras you have, they will also know what the queue is behind?
They do. They're wide angle, particularly on the exits and the entrances. They're wide angle because one of the things that you like to be able to see is if there is a queue, if there's something, if there's three or four cars that are in a lane, or if it's very busy, those kinds of things. And so the way that we've done our camera locations, we have a broad view, and then we actually have the ability of seeing all the way down to a validation or a credit card. For instance, if someone puts their credit card in upside down, we would know that. We could see that.
Okay.
Can I ask a piggyback question?
Sure.
Off of that?
Sure.
There? What I've noticed sometimes in our garages is people in vehicles that are just a little too big for the garage, but technically fit, like a pickup truck with a certain length. We'll go in and park in a place that makes it difficult to navigate through the parking structure. And what we typically do now, if that happens, is you go down and you tell someone who's operating the station that there's a problem and they address it. How would you address that in the future?
Well, at every kiosk in every lane, there's direct communication, so it would be at the kiosk.
Okay.
So if you actually pushed a button, you would have access immediately to someone to talk to, and we could dispatch, in this case, don't forget that there's cleaning people and there's security in every facility. So we'd have the ability to dispatch security at that point.
So just to be, it took a while for me to get the details of this. So when you press the button to talk to somebody, there'll be somebody available 24 hours a day on the other end of that button and speaker, right?
Yes.
And then they in turn, and that's important in case you've got someone who is working in the facility already helping somebody else. So it wouldn't be the case where you wouldn't get another person on the end of the speaker because they're separate. And then the dispatch of that happens and they're able to troubleshoot in terms of if something goes way wrong, you can troubleshoot employees amongst the garages to help out if needed.
It is. We've got protocols. So, for instance, the way that the system works is that we actually use Nextel cellular technology. And so the protocols go to the person that's in the facility first, our employee in the facility, security second, and our supervisors as well. So those protocols work very quickly.
Are your employees available remotely? Are they empowered to make a decision that, okay, this person is causing too much of a queue, whatever they say, fine?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to, because what can happen, and again, one of the cash control aspects of this that's so good is again, the recording of any kind of transaction like that where we actually have to let someone go raise the gate remotely or anything like that because of a traffic concern. So you've got a decision being made from that basis where no one's actually handling cash at that point, and that's documented back to the city.
So they are empowered to say raise the gate?
They are.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just had a couple of questions. Maybe it's directed more to our city folks, but talk about the job loss. So I don't know how many cashiers are employed right now by Star Park, but it's got to be in the 30 to 50.
And looking at the proposals and the hours worked between the competitors here, there's about 40 FTE in the parking garages, and that number over the five-year period goes down to 28, a 12 FTE reduction. And this is primarily due to the technology and not having cashiers at each place. We are...
And there's a commitment... I guess it was by Central and the city to for those twelve FTE that
we are aware, we are sensitive to the issue of employment. Central is committed to working with these folks to try to retain Star Park employees to the greatest extent possible, and we have control over how fast we go in technology to ease this transition and try to make it as soft as we can.
So my final question. You were a little coy about when we asked about the parking rates. You said, we're not projecting an increase now.
There's nothing in this contract that inherently, to meet the projections, inherently to requires us to raise rates to meet the financial projections. As we look at all parking rates downtown, and the reason we move this to transportation is so that there would be sort of council could consider and we could manage, among other things, the financial forecast together on street and garage. So this contract, has extensions, and I think the coyness is that who knows what will happen in 5 years, but it won't be because of anything inherent in this contract. If we decide to raise rates, we can raise rates.
I guess I just want to express it's my desire that we not raise rates at least in this three-year initial period. I mean, we're netting $10 million a year. I'm not sure why we would want to raise and we're trying to get people to shop downtown, and that's a challenge, as anybody who shopped over the holiday season may see. I think downtown still is at a very,
very... Downtown's done quite well this past holiday season, so...
In
part because the rates that we raised at the request of the business community went to marketing. We have no plans to raise rates in the 3 years, but depends on how long the recession goes. So I appreciate your comment. Did you have anything more?
Will rate increases come to us as a
rate
council?
Rate increases always come to us.
Okay. Great.
Commissioner Fish?
Thank you, Mayor. Christine, I appreciate the exchanges we had with your office and with Kyle for some clarifications. I want to follow up on something that Commissioner Fritz raised, which is the term of the contract and council's role in the renewals. And thanks to what you furnished to us, it's now clear to me that you're asking for our approval today to enter into this contract, which has an initial 3-year term. Years 4 and 5 are subject to a decision that this operator is doing a good job and can be extended. And then if it goes beyond year 5, years 5 to 10 would be subject to council approval, correct?
That's
so
correct.
As it currently is structured, we approve years 1 through 3. PBOT, in connection with you, would approve years 4 and 5, and council would have to approve anything beyond 5. Is that correct?
That's correct. The ordinance that you have before you is council is actually authorizing the 5-year agreement right now. The contract term is written for the initial 3 years with the option for us to renew years 4 and 5.
So originally, as I read, because it said the initial term of this contract is for 3 years, I just assumed it was going to come back to us at 3 years, and we would then get the benefit of your evaluation of whether they were performing and whether it should be renewed. And I guess now I understand that the intent was for 5 years. So, Mayor, rather than propose to come back to us after 3 years, what I'd like to propose through legislative history is that the council get at least 90 days notice of any intent to renew beyond 3 years, so that if the council has a question and wants a further briefing on that issue, we'd have that opportunity.
Absolutely.
One question I forgot to ask. So these jobs are subject to the city's fair wage ordinance. Is that correct?
The security and janitorial, yes.
So just to clarify, so
it's status quo on that.
So prior, if you determine after evaluating, and there's a lot of accountability built into this with your annual audits and your the criteria you've specified, if you determine in year 3 that it should be renewed 1 year or 2 additional years, we would get 90 days notice of your intent to do so in case council wanted to weigh in on that. That's our understanding.
Yes, and we had a discussion that PBOT can come back and do a report to council at that 90-day notice if that's something that
I'm not proposing we prescribe that. If council receives notice, then if council has issues, they could ask for a hearing on that. So thank you.
And the 12 FTEs that are projected to be lost, those are all cashiers?
Yes, they are.
So the level of in-building security remains the same?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other discussion from council? All right. Does anyone wish to testify? Thank you for your testimony.
No one signed up.
Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fritz.
I appreciate staff and the mayor taking another run at this contract and making sure the process is, again, transparent and clear. I share the concerns about job retention and review, so I'm glad my colleagues have proposed some reporting on that. And I'm encouraged that there will be good financial management and that the city can expect to see increased parking revenues through the efforts of Central and with the partnership with our folks here in Portland. And thank you to Mr. Jay for being here today. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to welcome Central to... These are our city garages, and I look forward to a good relationship, and I hope that you will find jobs for those 12 FTE that are projected to be lost. Many of those people are minorities and women, and it's important to me that they be have opportunities within the central organization, so I will be watching that closely. I also want to thank Star Park for the 4 or 5 years that they've managed the garages for us, and as I said, welcome to Central. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, I think this action today signifies a dramatic shift in how the city has handled managing parking contracts. This is the second contract I've been involved in since I've been on council. Both of them have been controversial when it has come time to renew them. I was part of those on council who wanted to make sure that in the final analysis when we awarded this contract, nobody could accuse us of being unfair. So I appreciate Mayor Adams taking this back, having another run at the RFP process and evaluating it fairly. Having said that, from the initial briefing that I received from the winners of the contract until today, I have been impressed with the new approach that they intend to take, which I think the council needs to hopefully fully appreciate, that increases the city's revenues, decreases the city's opportunities for lost revenue or misplaced revenue, and I think brings a very professional approach to the garages that we have yet to see to this date. So I am very pleased and recognize the work that Sam has done to make sure that this happens, and I hope Portlanders appreciate that we're running these much like a business would run their operations, and we will be the benefit as Portland taxpayers as a result. Aye.
Adams.
Thanks to staff for your work on this. Appreciate it very much. Aye. Can you please read the title for second and call the vote, second reading, item number 59.
Amend private for hire transportation regulations code to add regulation of horse-drawn carriages. Fritz.
Thank you to all the staff who worked so diligently on this, and indeed all of the citizen input on this. I do note that I think there's a Scrivener's error in a couple of places in the code language where it refers to the administrator or his designee. I don't think we need the or his designee. I think we want to make the code gender neutral. So I'm assuming we can do that as a Scrivener's error, or do I need, city attorney's telling me we do. Good. The most compelling testimony that I heard last week was from Scott Beckstead of the Oregon Humane Society, who's an equine protection specialist, and he said that he strongly supports the proposed regulations, that they are a modest and balanced approach that addresses health and well-being of horses. And I am not an expert in horses, and so I greatly appreciated his advice. I think that they can be part of a vibrant downtown and a wonderful business opportunity, and I therefore support these very reasonable protections. And thanks again to the staff. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I also want to thank the staff, who I think who worked very hard to arrive at some fair and balanced regulations here that I think strike the right balance, I guess is what I want to say. The I don't want to say fair and balanced. I don't want to sound like Fox News. They strike the right balance between those who were suggesting that we totally ban horse-drawn carriages in the city versus those probably who were happy with the status quo. I think it is important to provide the necessary temperature regulations and other regulations that are part of this ordinance. I think those really are not too onerous. I explored that a lot last week about the fee. They don't seem onerous, and I think they will provide better working conditions for our horses. And I do think that they do provide some character to a city, and so we should keep them, but under the more humane conditions that will be achieved under these regulations. So thank you, and pleased to vote aye.
Leonard? Adams?
Well, I want to thank the staff who have worked on this. I agree it's, just common sense, fair, compassionate, but allows for the growth of the industry, which I agree adds to the sort of ambiance of downtown. So thank you very much. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for item number 60, second reading.
Authorize water revenue bonds to finance and refinance water system capital improvements. Fish? Fritz.
Oh, Fritz.
It's hard to get used to the new order, isn't it? Just for me. As was discussed last week, this is authorizing previously planned spending and the borrowing for such. And it's the budget process and the project contracting process that provides an opportunity for the public to provide comments. The next Water Bureau budget meeting is February 16th from 2 to 4 in the Portland building, and the public is welcome to weigh in on these questions throughout the budget process. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 16 is approved. Can you please read the title, Emergency Ordinance, item number 61.
Authorize franchise fee settlement with MCI Metro Access Transmission Services, LLC.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. I am pleased to bring before the Council an audit settlement with MCI Metro negotiated by our Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management in cooperation with the City Attorney's Office. This outcome is based on a well-done audit conducted by the Revenue Bureau staff pursuant to an ongoing successful interagency agreement with Cable. Settlement of this audit will bring an immediate payment of nearly $250,000, $237,962.15. That is a specific audit into the city's general fund. This is new, unanticipated one-time money. The settlement will also add approximately $10,000 a year to MCI Metro's ongoing franchise fee payments to the city, which currently amounts to approximately $122,000 a year. None of this would be possible without the ongoing excellent work of dedicated cable office staff who carry out an ongoing schedule of audits for all of our utility franchisees, as well as consistently enforcing existing code and franchise provisions in order to maximize revenues for the city. Also, our cable staff and Tim Crail in my office, Skip Newberry in the mayor's office, and Brendan Finn in Commissioner Saltzman's office are working together with citizens to bring a citywide broadband strategic plan to the council later this year. This is just an example of the other work that the cable office does. It's an exciting and challenging time for the Cable and Franchise Management Office. I'm happy in bringing this ordinance today as an example of how our hard work is paying off for the citizens of Portland. David Olson, the Director of the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management, is available and right here to respond to any additional council questions. David.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioner Fritz, council members. I would also like to introduce you to our new Utilities Program Manager, Jennifer Lee. She's the successor to Dave Solis in managing that program. And we're beyond thrilled that she is here, and she'll be our chief staff person for our utility program, franchise, audit issues, and, of course, the ever-popular wireless issues. So,
how many contracts do you, or agreements do you monitor?
About 36. And that in addition to the license fee program, which is a tax program. So the universe of payers is larger. Franchisees involving street use is a slightly smaller set.
So how many, what's the number non-duplicated all categories that your office oversees?
Oh, from all categories of payers? Mayor, that would probably be more than 400, I would say, 400 to 500. If we count all payers under both the license tax and the franchising processes.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
I'm sorry, I missed. What was the amount of the settlement?
Oh, it's
$237,962.15.
Okay. All right. This is an emergency ordinance. Does anyone wish to testify on item number 61?
No one signed up.
Please call the vote on item number 61.
Fritz.
Well, thank you, Mayor, for giving me this assignment a little over 2 years ago. It's been fascinating. Thank you to David and Mary Beth Henry, Deputy Director, and all the staff in the cable office. Nine people bring in this amazing amount of revenue for the city. I think it's over $72 million that goes into the general fund and is then available for good uses for the city of Portland and the citizens of Portland. So we appreciate your diligence on this, and it's especially helpful to have this additional money as we look to the budget next year. Aye.
Fish.
Congratulations, Commissioner Fritz, David, and your team at the Bureau. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Good work, and welcome, Ms. Lee, to the job. And looks good. Well done. Aye.
Leonard.
And thank you, Amanda, for doing such a good job overseeing this office. It's one of my first assignments, and I enjoyed it as well, so I appreciate all that's being done. Aye.
Adams.
Congratulations, Commissioner Fritz, David, and the entire team. Welcome aboard. Aye. All right, 61 is approved. That gets us to the end of